Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Louis D'Souza. Today is Monday. Happy Monday, May the 20th, 2019. It is 8 a.m. in New York, 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, 1 p.m. in London, and 10 p.m. in Sydney, Australia, but wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I'm happy that the week has started because I got to tell you, Louis, I kind of miss doing the podcast on the weekend. I like having the weekend off. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy doing the things that I do on the weekend, but I look forward to doing these podcasts.
So you're talking about the teacher called contrast.
The teacher called contrast is wonderful. Yeah, especially when, you know, I end up focusing more often on what I want than what I don't want, on what I like than rather than what I don't like. And I'm really noticing lately, especially, I am feeling good so much of the time. I'm getting better and better at staying on topics that I enjoy, on activities and thought processes and conversations that make me feel good. And boy, it really does work. This stuff is great stuff.
No more drugs for you, hey? Not needed.
No. I haven't been back in years. But there are other things besides drugs. I mean, I guess it depends what you call a drug, right? I mean, there are lots of drugs. You know, watching television can be a drug. You know, food can be a drug. There are lots of drugs. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess occasionally we all indulge in a drug or two in the sense of, you know, we'll dive into the contrast a little bit and we'll, you know, see what's there and so forth. But I'm a casual drugger. I'm not an addicted drugger.
That's why you haven't grown fast enough.
Oh, my. No, but it's all in good fun. So how are you doing? How's your weekend been? You having a good week, I presume?
Yeah. It's been great, really, really great. I had one of my properties tenanted, and, all went smoothly. So, yeah, very, very,
very
happy.
Nice. All right. Yeah, that's always good news. And, of course, we have been discussing Illusions by Richard Bach. Yeah. We finished six chapters.
You're an illusion. You.
Yes. Yeah, I saw somebody posting on a Facebook group. I don't remember where it was, but somebody was saying in response to somebody who was complaining about how other people in their lives were miserable. I said, well, there's nobody else in your life. So,
yeah. That's a great answer. I really like it.
Well, it's also a piss you off answer if you don't really understand what the heck they're talking about.
I understand it, yes. Read Richard Bach's Illusions.
Yes. I think this was actually a Neville Goddard follower, but it hits the same message. It doesn't make any difference. It still works just fine. But yeah, and Richard, I think we both agree. He has the most simple, direct, story-based message of anyone who's in the whole LOA greater family that I've seen anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, you agree with that?
I would agree. Yeah. Big fan. I was so impressed when it first came out.
I also noticed, too, I mean, we've done, this is what, our fourth show for this show? I can't remember how many shows we've done.
Fifth, I think.
And in those five shows, it's kind of different from other books that, I mean, because I've done books with Cindy Chavez and Wendy Dillard and others with Joel Elston. This one, most of those books are very deep, right? They have a lot of layers, a lot of metaphor, a lot of symbolism. This one has a symbolism, but it's just right in your face. So we're finding there's not a whole lot to say after we're done with it.
And that's the beauty of it.
Well, it's also challenging.
We could talk about that all day.
This is true. This is very true. Yes. So, yeah, but no, it's like one of those things. It's a two-edged sword. On the one hand, it's great because it's so clear. On the other hand, you know, well, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
It will just fly through the remaining chapters. I don't know. Anyway, this is also a live stream. And if you're listening to the live stream, feel free to jump in with questions or comments about the Illusions or about anything else regarding Law of Attraction. And we'll be glad to chime into the conversation. But, I figure unless you've got something else, let's just dive in.
Let's dive in. This
next chapter, chapter 7, is really short. It's 3 pages long. This is not going to take long to read. So, and the first page is like half the page is white space at the top. So this is real short. Okay. So let's see. We should probably summarize where we are so far, right? Richard is basically getting an education of a lifetime. And he's still confused, and he tried to run away, and then Don found him. in the middle of a cornfield that should have been impossible to find, but he found him instantly.
Needle in a haystack.
Needle in a haystack, yep. And Donald Shimoda found that needle. Not surprising to us, but nevertheless surprising to Richard. He was stunned. And then he tried to look real calm about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, they go to sleep, wake up the next morning. Wednesday morning, it's 6 o'clock. I'm not awake, and whoom, there's this enormous noise, sudden and violent as some high explosive symphony. Instant thousand voice choirs, words in Latin, violins and timpani and trumpets to shattered glass. The ground shuddered. The fleet rocked on her wheels, and I came out from under the wing like a 400-volt cat, first straight out exclamation points. The sky was cold fire sunrise, the clouds alive in wild paint, but all of it blurred in the dynamite crescendo. Stop it! Stop it! Off the music! Off it! Shimoda yelled so loud and so furious I could hear him over the din, and the sound stopped at once. Echoes rolling off and away and away and away. And then it was a gentle, holy song, quiet as the breeze. Beethoven in a dream. He was unimpressed. Look, I said, off it! The music stopped. He said. I just looked at him. There is a time and a place for everything, right? He said. Well, you know, time and place, well. And a little celestial music is fine in the privacy of your own mind, and maybe on special occasions. But the first thing in the morning and turned up that loud, what are you doing? What am I doing? Don, I was sound asleep. What do you mean, what am I doing? He shook his head, shrugged his shoulders helplessly, snorted and went back to his sleeping bag under the wing. The handbook was upside down in the grass where it had fallen. I turned it over carefully and read one of my favorite phrases. Argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they're yours. There was a lot I didn't understand about messiahs. One of which is he's discovering he's one of them. He's discovering it in a rather, shall we say, musical way.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an experience even similar to that? I can't say that I ever have.
I have had inner music, but nobody's told me they've heard it outside. That is another dimension of it.
Yes, that certainly is. I've never explored that one at all. I hear music in my mind all the time, but I've never heard it where I could actually project it or somebody else was hearing. Well, that's not entirely true. Louise and I often hear the same song.
Hmm.
And we haven't quite figured out why, other than we attribute it to the fact that we're on the same wavelength so often.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much probably how it is. Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it's not like I've succeeded in broadcasting out a performance of Led Zeppelin and the rest of the world hears it. Just haven't done that.
No, that actually blew my mind because I hadn't thought of even the concept yet. It was outside any reading I'd had. It's like, wow,
And of course,
the music and project it out into the world.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
And I still don't know anybody who's done it, and I haven't read any book of anybody who's talked about it.
That's true. Nobody ever writes about that. Yeah, this is definitely groundbreaking. And then there's the one segment from Messiah's Handbook, argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they're yours, which I have rephrase it in a number of different ways at times, but wow. Boy, does that summarize the essence, not just of being a deliberate creator, but of being alive.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because we live in a world that we created. We created it with our thoughts. We created it with our minds. And we did it by creating structure. There was you could call it a metaphorical structure if you want to, but it's still a structure. And structure implies limitation. You put a boundary here. You put a boundary here. You have this thing here. These create a limited space, so to speak.
So Abram put it a really interesting way the other day, and I was like quite enthralled by the simple statement. This guy was saying, why does it keep on happening to me? Why does it keep on happening to me? It keeps on happening the same things as well. You know what I love about you kind of guys? This guy's like, what are you talking about? They're saying, well, you're the guys that keep everything in place. You make sure the gravity's still in place. You make sure that the universe is still right. Go, you know, the moon's still going round and all the rest of it. And, you know, because you keep on thinking the similar thoughts of yesterday, you keep on creating the same reality again today, and you keep it in place. And I was like, you know, it was really another way of looking at it, and it was really eye-opening.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And it's a very good point, because I think it was, I can't remember who it was, but there was one of the authors that are out there that writes alternative stuff very similar to, you know, in the same kind of genre as what we talk about, talked about how scientific studies have shown that, I think it's like 95% of the thoughts we had yesterday are going to be mirrors of the same thoughts that we have today. We're such habitual creatures that day in, day out, we do the same thought process over and over and over again, and we don't notice it.
Yeah.
That's the amazing part. We don't pay any attention to the fact that we keep doing the same stuff. We keep focusing on the same stuff. And I mean, it kind of makes sense when you think about it. I mean, you have to eat, so that's going to be part of your thought process every day. And you have to have a place to sleep, so that's going to be part of your thought process every day. And
it's very weird waking up in a different bed, in a different country, in a different planet, in a different body every morning.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be shocking, I think is the word.
Yeah. But you could get used to anything.
This is true. I think the real question is, could you do that and remember that you're a deliberate creator?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that'll hone it to the point of true understanding.
Yeah, because once you understand that and then you experience a major shift, presumably that happens because of a change in your thought process. So that's why you woke up in this new dimension with this new planet and these new people that you didn't know, but somehow you seem to know them anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they didn't have two arms, they had six and all that kind of
thing. Eyes on the back of your head, literally.
Louise and I went up to Marblehead, Massachusetts, which is right north of Boston on the coast, it was a long drive. It was a 2-hour drive to have lunch. And it was a great lunch. It was a seafood lunch. My wife had a lobster salad and I had a lobster roll. Mm-hmm. And as we're eating, you know how sometimes placemats, they'll put advertising out or they'll put messages or, you know, that kind of thing. Well, the placemat in this place had, it was a seafood restaurant, so the main part of the placemat was how do we eat a lobster for those people who've never done it before. And then down below, there was a little collection of bullet points, factoids about lobsters. One of the things that they said about lobsters was the lobster's brain is in its throat. And I thought to myself, well, you know, that's appropriate. How many people think in their throat? You know, we're kind of like lobsters in that sense. You know, we're thinking in terms of, well, first of all, a lot of people talk without thinking. Second of all, there are a lot of people who think with what they eat. So what they eat is what they're thinking about. So there's a lot of stuff that happens in the throat, and it kind of makes sense. Then the other thing that was interesting is that lobsters feel with their feet. So as they're moving along the surface of the ocean, they're feeling with their feet, and more importantly, they're tasting with their feet. So they can tell what the flavor is of the stuff there, so they can decide what they want to consume.
Mm-hmm. Tongues on my feet, there's a new concept.
Yeah. So now you really don't want to take that one too far, because when you find out what lobsters eat, you say, no, I don't think I want that diet. But nevertheless, it's an interesting thing. So can you imagine waking up? Now, I'm using lobsters as kind of a weird example of it, but can you imagine waking up, like you said, in a different place, different dimension, different being, and so forth, and find that you are feeling and tasting through your feet? And how would you respond to that?
Well, the closest I've come is when you wake up in the morning after a vivid dream of as a different body and different planet and different parents and siblings and friends and all the rest of it, and you look in the mirror like, who the hell am I? It's really confusing.
So there's actually a good reason for us to have the same thoughts every day, but it's still a valid point. Yeah, we create this reality every single day. So chapter 8, this one's considerably longer than 7. We finished the day in Hammond, Wisconsin, flying a few Monday passengers, and then we walked to town for dinner and started back. Don, I will grant you that this life can be interesting or dull or whatever we choose to make it, but even in my brilliant times, I have never been able to figure out why we're here in the first place. Tell me something about that. It's amazing how this book just within like 100 pages moves into ultimate questions. This is a fictional story, right? This is a novel. And all of a sudden we're on ultimate questions. We passed the hardware store, which was closed, and the movie theater, which was open, showing Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And instead of answering, he stopped, turned back on the sidewalk. "You have money, don't you?" "Lots. What's the matter?" "Well, let's see the show," he said. "You buy?" "I don't know, Don, you go ahead. I'll get back to the airplanes. I don't like to leave them there too long." What was suddenly so important about a motion picture? "Ah, the planes are okay. Let's go to the show. It's already started. Ah, so we come in late." He was already buying his ticket, so I followed him into the dark, and we sat down near the back of the theater. There might have been 50 people around us in the gloom. I forgot why we came after a while and got caught up in the story, which I've always thought is a classic movie anyway. This would be my third time seeing Sundance. The time in the theater spiraled and stretched the way it does in a good film, and I watched it a while for technical reasons, how each scene was designed and fit to the next, and why this scene now and not later on. I tried to look at it that way, but I got spun up in the story and forgot. About the part where Butch and Sundance are surrounded by the entire Bolivian army almost at the end, Shimoda touched my shoulder. I leaned toward him, watching the movie, wishing he could have kept whatever he was going to say till it was over. "Richard."
"Yeah."
"Why are you here?"
"It's a good movie, Don. Shh."
Butch and Sundance, blood all over them, were talking about why they ought to go to Australia.
"Why is it good?" he said.
"It's fun. Shh, I'll tell you later."
"Snap out of it. Wake up. It's all illusions."
I was irked.
"Donald, there's just a few minutes more, and then we can talk all you want. But let me watch the movie, okay?"
He whispered intensely, dramatically.
"Richard, why are you here?"
"Look, I'm here because you asked me to come in here." I turned back and tried to watch the end.
"You didn't have to come. You could have said no thank you." "I like the movie."
The man in front turned to look at me for a second.
"I like the movie, Don. Is there anything wrong with that?"
"Nothing at all," he said. And he didn't say another word till it was over, and we were walking again past the used tractor lot and out into the dark toward the field and the airplanes. It would be raining before long. I thought about his odd behavior in the theater.
"You do everything for a reason, Don?"
"Sometimes."
"Well, why the movie?
Why did you all of a sudden want to see Sundance?"
"You asked a question."
"Yes, but do you have an answer?"
"That is my answer. We went to the movie because you asked a question. The movie was the answer to your question."
He was laughing at me. I knew it.
"And what was my question?"
There was a long, pained silence. "Your question, Richard, was that even in your brilliant times, you have never been able to figure out why we are here." By the way, one of the few times that Dal Shimoda makes a mistake, because that's not actually a question. It's a statement. I remembered. "And the movie was my answer?"
"Yes."
"Oh. You don't understand," he said.
"No."
"That was a good movie," he said, "but the world's best movie is still an illusion, is it not? The pictures aren't even moving. They only appear to move. Changing light that seems to move across a flat screen set up in the dark."
"Well, yes."
I was beginning to understand. "The other people, any people anywhere who go to any movie show, why are they there when it's only illusions?"
"Well, it's entertainment," I said.
"Fun, that's right. That's number one."
"Could be educational."
"Good. It's always that. Learning, number two."
"Well, it's fantasy, escape."
"Well, that's fun, too. That's one."
"Well, technical reasons to see how a film is made."
"Learning, okay, two."
"Escape from boredom?"
"Escape, you said that."
"Social, to be with friends," I said.
"Reason for going, but not for seeing the film. That's fun anyway, so that's number one." Whatever I came up with fit his two fingers. People see films for fun, or for learning, or for both together.
"And a movie is like a lifetime, Don, is that right?"
"Yes."
"Then why would anybody choose a bad lifetime or a horror movie?"
"Well, they not only come to the horror movie for fun, they know it is going to be a horror movie when they walk in," he said.
"But why?"
"Well, do you like horror films?"
"No."
"Do you ever see them?"
"No."
"But some people spend a lot of money and time to see horror or soap opera problems that to other people are dull and boring."
He left the question for me to answer.
"Well, yes."
"You don't have to see their films, and they don't have to see yours. And that is called freedom."
"But why would anybody want to be horrified or bored?"
Well, because they think they deserve it for horrifying somebody else, or they like the excitement of horrification, or that boring is the way they think films have to be. Can you believe that lots of people, for reasons that are very sound to them, enjoy believing that they are helpless in their own films? This is one point where I really disagree with them. I think a lot of people do enjoy exactly that. But he says, no, you can't. And that, Richard replies, no, I can't. Until you understand that, you will wonder why some people are unhappy. They are unhappy because they have chosen to be happy. And Richard, that is all right. We are game-playing, fun-loving, fun-having creatures. We are the otters of the universe. We cannot die. We cannot hurt ourselves any more than illusions on the screen can be hurt. But we can believe we're hurt in whatever agonizing detail we want. We can believe we're victims, killed and killing, shuttered around by good luck and bad luck. Many lifetimes, I asked. How many movies have you seen? Oh. Films about living on this planet, about living on other planets. Anything that's got time and space is all movie and all illusions, he said. But for a while, we can learn a huge amount and have a lot of fun with our illusions, can we not? How far do you take this movie thing, Don? How far do you want? You saw the film tonight partly because I wanted to see it. Lots of people choose lifetimes because they enjoy doing things together. The actors in the film tonight have played together in other films before or after, depending on which film you've seen first, or you can see them at the same time on different screens. We buy tickets to these films, pay admission by agreeing to believe in the reality of space and the reality of time. Neither one is true, but anyone who doesn't want to pay that price cannot appear on this planet or in any space-time system at all. Are there some people who don't have any lifetimes at all in space-time? Well, are there some people who never go to the movies? I see. They get their learning in different ways then. Right you are, he said, pleased with me. Space-time is a fairly primitive school, but a lot of people stay with the illusion even if it is boring, and they don't want the lights turned on early. Who writes these movies, Don? Isn't it strange how much we know if only we ask ourselves instead of somebody else, who writes these movies, Richard? Well, we do, I said. And who acts? Us. Who's the cameraman, the projectionist, the theater manager, the ticket taker, the distributor, and who watches them all happen? Who is free to walk out in the middle anytime, change the plot whenever? Who is free to see the same film over and over again? Well, let me guess, I said. Anybody who wants to? Is that enough freedom for you, he said. And is that why movies are so popular, that we instinctively know they are a parallel of our own lifetimes? Well, maybe so, maybe not. Doesn't matter much, does it? What's the projector? Mind, I said. No, imagination. It's our imagination, no matter what you say. What's the film, he asked. Got me. Whatever we give our consent to put into our imagination? Maybe so, Don. You can hold a reel of film in your hands, he said, and it's all finished and complete. Beginning, middle, end are all there that same second, the same millionths of a second. The film exists beyond the time that it records, and if you know what the movie is, you know generally what's going to happen before you walk into the theater. There's going to be battles and excitement, winners and losers, romance, disaster. You know that's all going to be there, but in order to get caught up and swept away in it, in order to enjoy it to its most, you have to put it in a projector and let it go through the lens minute by minute. Any illusion requires space and time to be experienced, so you pay your nickel and you get your ticket, and you settle down and forget what's going on outside the theater, and the movie begins for you. And nobody's really hurt? That's just tomato sauce blood? Oh, no, it's blood all right, he said. But it might as well be tomato sauce for the effect it has on our real life. And reality? Reality is divinely indifferent, Richard. A mother doesn't care what part her child plays in his games. One day bad guy, next day good guy. The is doesn't even know about our illusions and games. It only knows itself. And us in its likeness, perfect and finished. I'm not sure I want to be perfect and finished. Talk about boredom. Well, look at the sky, he said. And it was such a quick subject change that I looked at the sky. There was some broken cirrus way up high, the first bit of moonlight silvering the edges. Pretty sky, I said. Ah, but it is a perfect sky. Well, it's always a perfect sky, Don. Are you telling me that even though it's changing every second, the sky is always a perfect sky? Well, gee, I'm smart. Yes. And the C, it's always a perfect C and it's always changing too, he said. If perfection is stagnation, then heaven is a swamp. And the is ain't hardly no swamp cookie. Isn't hardly no swamp cookie, I corrected absently. Perfect and all the time changing. Yeah, I'll buy that. Well, you bought it a long time ago if you would insist on time. I turned to him as we walked. Doesn't it get boring for you, Don, staying on just this one dimension? Oh, am I staying on just this one dimension, he said. Are you? Why is it that everything I say is wrong? Is everything you say wrong, he said. I think I'm in the wrong business. What, you think maybe real estate, he said. Well, real estate or insurance. There's a future in real estate if you want one. Okay, sorry, I said. I don't want a future or a past. I just assume become a nice old master of the world of illusion. Looks like maybe in another week. Well, Richard, I hope not that long. I looked at him carefully, but he wasn't smiling. That's a tough chapter to read, by the way, because there's not a whole lot of indication about which person is reading, so you have to kind of shift back and forth. And I never was really good at doing a big shift in my voice, so that was kind of tough.
Oh, I think you read brilliantly.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. But still, this is a probably the most esoteric chapter in the book because they really go flying off. And yeah, he does it really nicely with that metaphor about the movies. Because in a sense, that's really what life is, isn't it? Life is a movie we created.
Yeah. And how much does all the blood and gore mean? Well, how much do you want it to mean?
Yeah, right.
Not much.
Well, some people want it to mean a lot.
Yeah, I know.
I saw a news item today. There's the ending to that television series that's been going on for about 8 years, The Game of Thrones. I've never really watched it, but I'm aware.
Yeah, I watched the last episode this morning.
Yeah. and the people reviewing it were panning it because it had what they described as a saccharine ending. They said, no, this is a film that was all about the bad guys don't win, the good guys don't win, and it's just this horribly dysfunctional world, and ending that way just doesn't work. I thought to myself, well, that's really interesting because that fits the same idea of the Donald Shimoda metaphor about movies. You know, they wanted to live in that world. They, you know, for the space of time that they're watching those television episodes, they want to live in that world where the good guys don't win and the bad guys don't win. They like that. Mm. The people who are fans, and there are lots of them. There are millions of fans of that show.
Well, do you think life could continue the way it does if it wasn't like that? You know.
Probably
good
not.
Good guys one day, bad guys another, and neither of them are good or bad when you understand everything. So.
Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of that show? You said you watched the last ending, so I guess.
I watched every single. You know, what happened was I read the book, and I thought, wow, this is amazing, absolutely incredible. I bought all three audiobooks and was totally enthralled by them. And then suddenly there's a TV series. You know when a book becomes famous, like J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, and then he's dead many years ago, and then suddenly they make a film out of him. But this guy, J.R., what's his name? J.R. Martin.
I think J.R. is actually required initials for a leading author. You have Tolkien, you have Rowling, and he's J.K., but you have J.R. is like a major thing.
Well, Mr. Martin, he's just brilliant. So I was enthralled by the idea that a TV series, a major TV series, was coming out on this book I just read. just listened to on Audible. And it is really interesting because, you know, a lot of these TV series, they've got the same actors week after week after week.
Right.
Well, the main actor in no time dies in Game of Thrones, and the next main actor dies, and the next main actor dies. And you're left with a few side people who kind of stay in it, who you didn't quite know were the main actors or were kind of the follow through. And you're quite enthralled by the idea because that's really how life works. You know, the main guys often get chopped. And it's, you know, like when I watch the A-Team, for example, the same guys were there every year, every season and every episode shooting at each other again and again, and nobody dies and nobody even gets hit by the bullets, which is the most amusing thing about A-Team. episode after episode, I was still, even at my young age of watching them in South Africa, blown away how nobody was ever hit by any of those bullets.
Well, they're all descended from cats, you see. They all have nine lives, so that's what it is.
Yeah. So they did the costumes and the acting par excellence. It was It's a phenomenal story, acting. I loved the movie. I think the movie was actually better than the book, but I'm sure a lot of people will argue with that. So my imagination, I've noticed along the way, is not as great as some people's. And some people, when they read a book, they really create the entire scene. And when they see the movie, it kind of conflicts with their great right. scene they've seen. So I don't tend to have that problem because my imagination is not as clear as some people's.
I never heard that explanation before. That's a cool one because, I mean, that's a very common complaint that, you know, the books obviously are going to have much more detail than a movie can possibly include in an hour and a half. So you're going to have stuff chopped out and so forth. People often complain about that. But I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, well, my imagination isn't all that good, so I don't notice the difference. That's a different response.
Well, it was interesting because as a kid, I used to lie down in the house in the mountains in front of the hi-fi, which is the only radio that I had access to. And on Friday evenings after school, and I used to listen to a whole slew of different programs, High Adventure, The Mind of Tracy Dark, who could bend spoons and had a star master guiding her, and Squat Cars and High Adventure, and they left massive imprint on my imagination. Massive. And I reckon a lot of the things in my life have been an effect of listening to those programs.
Well, that's an interesting point. Because we talk about how this lifetime, this universe and so forth, it's all a creation of our minds, our minds working together, essentially. And yet you end up with people who are watching stuff like that and they're saying, well, it was heavily imprinted upon them. And yet we're the ones who are creating this. So it creates a bit of an anomaly. I mean, we're creating it, but this stuff is imprinted on our minds.
Not necessarily. When you take the point of view that you choose which parents you go to, you choose from a higher perspective what vibrations to let into what you are based on what you are vibrating, what you are tuned into, what vibration you're allowing to come in. So really, as much as we would like to say it's imprinted on us, it is only imprinted on us with our permission.
And the ironic part is most of the time we aren't aware of that. Most of us, when we're sitting in that theater at age 7, are not aware that we had this prior agreement that put us in that theater and said, yes, we're going to be imprinted by all this stuff. That's usually not part of our consciousness.
So Abram makes the clear statement, conscious creator. So it implies that you can create unconsciously or not consciously.
It does.
Which means that what they state is that it's far more delicious to be a conscious creator, co-creator, or rather than an unconscious creator. And that's really the difference. You're creating your reality if you know it or not, if you like it or not, if you want it or not. But it's just a hell of a lot nicer if you if you're aware of it all. And, you know, you can start choosing your movie more.
That's a fine point right there. You said it's a hell of a lot nicer if you can do it consciously. And yet there are so many people who don't do it consciously. So it makes me wonder, do they prefer to do it unconsciously?
Well, just look at your own life instead of looking at all those other people's. Did you create unconsciously at one stage?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, so you created unconsciously. And why did you do that?
I'm not sure I can even answer the question because I'm not sure I knew.
Well, your higher self always knows and always known, and it's quite happy to go along playing a default program until you wake up, and then you can start playing with it. And often the contrast, the unconsciousness, which did for me in my life, create an intense desire to be able to do it consciously.
Yeah, well, I know certainly once I became aware of the idea that I could be conscious in my creations, I could be a deliberate creator, that was instantly intriguing. I mean, I think that's probably what resonated with me more than anything else when I heard about The Secret and Abraham and other teachers of that kind. because I said, wow, boy, I feel like I'm so out of control. I'd love to have the control back. So that resonated with me. And yet there are so many people who get the same message and they don't react that way. They react like, no, I don't buy into that. It's a bunch of nonsense. It's not going to go there. They're clearly arguing in favor of, I want to stay unconscious.
Like you were before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is turning you into the person you are today. So.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just finding it intriguing. That's all.
You're finding it intriguing that people want to wander around life like this.
Yeah, exactly. And for people who are on the podcast wondering what he's talking about, he was doing like a blind man thing on screen. So,
yeah. So, yeah, it's okay. You know, that's something you learn along the way. That everything and every situation that anybody's ever put themselves in is okay. And I can see a lot of people arguing with that, but
yeah, yes.
I've never really focused on those kind of people, and I haven't had them come to me, so it's not really an issue. I really don't get those kind of conversations. I just don't.
Actually, that's one of the things that's different about me. I go looking for them.
Don't be surprised when you get them, Walt.
Well, I'm never surprised. No. Sometimes I'm a bit shocked, but never surprised. I used to be surprised. There was a time when I was surprised because I was so unconscious about this stuff. Now that I understand that I attract all of it, there are sometimes I say to myself, oh, damn, I just trapped myself again.
It's so amazing. The Watchtower guys came around again, and I was looking at
them. Oh, yeah, another visit?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Gotta love Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah. The interesting thing was the main question on their pamphlet is why all the suffering?
Mm.
Why all the suffering? Now, why would you want to focus on that too much? I don't know, but you know, the Bible in theory answers it. I read a few of those quotes.
I think what happens is a lot of people are very focused on suffering. There are a lot of people who want to fix it. There are a lot of people who want to complain about it. Mm. There are a lot of people who live it and complain about it. I mean, it's a major part of human life. So I think that's why the Jehovah's people are focusing on it, because that's how you market, right? You market to where people are actually at, what they're thinking about, what they're interested in, what they're emotionally connected to. I'm not saying it's a healthy thing. I don't think focusing on suffering is something I would recommend to anybody. Mm. But I can certainly see why they're doing that, because there's a lot of focus on it.
Yeah. I mean, looking at illusions here, it says, imagine the universe beautiful and just and perfect. Now, yeah. They would say to you, but you're not facing reality. There are a lot of people at the moment.
Yes.
But you create your reality. No, I don't. So who does create your reality?
God.
Oh, and then who's God? You know, you can't escape by saying God, unfortunately, not with me.
Well, actually, you can, it turns out. There is a way to escape, yeah.
All right.
Because the most honest answer you'll get from somebody, if you ask them that question, who is God? Hmm. The most honest answer is they'll say, I don't know, but I believe in him.
Hmm. So I'll say, that's great. I'll tell you who God is. It's your higher self, and that's you, actually. And you believe in yourself, and that's cool, man.
at this point, the tumblers are tumbling. Yes, yeah. That's exactly what happens. But, victimhood is what we're really kind of hinting at here. There is a sense of I am a victim of all that happens to me. It's outside of my control. I don't own any of it. I didn't create any of it. And if you try to tell me otherwise, I will do everything I can to avoid that subject.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of that.
I was just thinking, you know, argue for your limitations and they're yours.
Yes.
What are some of the common limitations people believe in?
Well, there's one of them right there. We just described one in great detail.
I was just thinking we should dig into a few more of those.
Yeah. Oh, God, there's... Well, the thing that I didn't understand it when I read this the first time, I understand it now, is that we always argue for our limitations. We live in a universe of space and time. That means there is limitation.
Just we argued for that.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, it's already there, you know, so the limitations are already there.
But some of the limitations are what you want, and some of the limitations are what you don't want.
Yeah, and the annoying part is realizing that we created the ones that we don't want just as well as we created the ones that we want.
God,
no, please, I can't get away from this. But yeah, that's exactly what happens. But it's such a wonderful phrase because it really does. It's one of those iterative phrases, right? Mm-hmm. You look at it and you go down a layer and you go down another layer and you go down another layer. And it's like this infinite number of layers. I argued for that limitation. And I argued for this one. And I argued for that one. And I argued for, oh my God, did I argue for all of these? Yes.
I was chatting to a lady the other day and she's just got divorced with 2 5-year-old children and moved house. So she was, you know, not altogether, you know, centered, which is understandable. And I was just chatting to her and saying, you know, you've gone through what is considered in this society to be two of the most stressful, the top one and two of the most stressful things that you can have out there, that you can do, and that is divorce and moving. So it really is, it can really throw you. But I also noted with the individual that there was a lot of openness to look for other things and to pick up and move forward.
Good for her.
That I didn't necessarily have any time to go into discussing, but you know, I definitely can see in that time frame with people how more open they are. You know, they start trusting their gut instinct, in other words, their emotional guidance, rather than all of the logical things in place, you know. I could go into that a lot more detail, but
I think you're
names and places to go into that in any more detail, but it was really, really, really interesting.
Oh, I think you're right on. The fact is that that's exactly what happens with a large number of people. And there is something to be said for what Joel and I often call it hitting bottom. That's a form of hitting bottom. You reach a point where you're just so vulnerable that you're open to, okay, what are the alternatives here? Because what I'm working on, the way I've been approaching it, hasn't been working for me. I need a different route here. I need a different path. Yeah. I like the fact that you mentioned suffering a few minutes ago. That's a favorite topic that I have with Joel, because Joel likes to make the point that you don't have to suffer. You often will have to struggle, but suffering is a choice. Suffering is all about, you know, I choose to suffer. I choose to feel bad about the situation. I'm going to make myself feel worse and worse, and then I'm going to say it's not my fault. That's what suffering is all about. And he tells a great story of a guy who was on an airplane with another guy. They weren't friends or anything. They were just seated next to each other. And the second guy was from Poland, and they got into a conversation during the flight and asked the guy about Poland. The guy was telling him, he says, you know, I've always admired the Polish people. And the guy says, why? He says, well, you've been through so much and you've suffered so much. I mean, you suffered in the world wars and you suffered before the world wars. And you know, he was going on, and the Polish guy interrupted him and said, no, exactly. We have struggled through a lot, but we never suffer.
Right. There's another way of looking at that. Somebody can go through that entire experience from a country point of view and live through 2 generations or whatever, but and not experience any of it.
Oh, yeah.
It can just completely pass them. So, you know, it is just a choice.
There is a documentary-type movie that appeared here in the U.S. focused on Julia Child, who was one of the cooking gurus in the U.S., and she was the cooking guru back in the 1960s. She had a television show. And they were basically surveying her life in this particular story. And early on in life, she was born into a wealthy family. She went to a finishing school. She had no idea really what she wanted to do with her life other than to get married and settle down and raise a family in grand style. This was in the middle of the Great Depression. And then all of a sudden, World War II comes and the attack on Pearl Harbor. And like so many people, she, in her words, rushed to Washington to sign up to fight the Nazis and restore the world order and all that kind of thing. Well, she ended up getting assigned to the Far East to a group that did very sensitive intelligence work, which basically meant that she was a secretary who was transposing, you know, coded messages and all that. It was really, really, really boring to her. But she ended up basically in the war in, I think it was Sri Lanka, doing this work, never saw a battle, never even heard about battles. They played volleyball every night. You know, it was just like there was no experience of World War II other than the ciphers that she was working on every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, where was World War II? It just wasn't there.
Well, there was a story. I can't remember. I just picked up bits and pieces of it, but it amazed me. The concentration camp in Germany during the Second World War, Jew camp, I think. And they had this child who was born, which shouldn't have been born, and they hid them in the toilet kind of sewer area. And the parent came down and chatted stories about knights and princes and all the rest of it and gave them a complete fictional world to go and slay beasts and and all the rest of it. And then they would give them food whenever they got some spare food and all the rest of it. And this kid grew up in a concentration camp completely oblivious to all of this.
Wow. Yeah, that's impressive.
Completely oblivious to it. I think that person is still alive today, but it was an incredible story.
It really illustrates how much influence we have over our own lives, often without realizing it, just through what we focus on, which is what Richard's talking about in the book. So we have, I think we have time to get one last chapter in because it's a pretty short chapter. It's even shorter than chapter 7. This one is exactly a page and a half. So I think we can get through this one.
A very short page and a half.
Very, very short page and a half. So anyway, Richard just realized that he's going to be a nice old master of the world in less than a week. And Donald was saying he hopes it doesn't take that long. The days blurred one into another. We flew as always, but I had stopped counting summer by the names of towns or the money we earned from passengers. I began counting the summer by the things I learned, the talks we had when flying was done, and by the miracles that happened now and then along the way to the time I knew at last that they aren't miracles at all. And then from the handbook, imagine the universe beautiful and just and perfect. There's your quote. The handbook said to me once, then be sure of one thing. The is has imagined it quite a bit better than you have. Two interesting thoughts. First, his word for source energy, the is. And I thought that was an interesting choice because when he wrote this, of course, this was still at a time when, at least here in America and probably throughout the world, but especially in America, religion really had a very strong hold. Christian religion had a very, very strong hold. It was the hold was weakening, but the vast majority of people associated religion with a God who was outside of themselves. And how do you relate to that person when you're writing to them? Well, he did it by changing God to is, and through that one word, kind of shifting the conversation. I thought it was really a brilliant choice because, I mean, he could have tried to say, well, you know, this is all inside of you, God, you are God and all that kind of thing. He would have lost that audience because that audience wasn't ready for it yet. But he didn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly well done, incredibly well. The is has imagined it, so your higher self has imagined it quite a bit better than you have. So from an Abram perspective, he's kind of saying that your vortex knows it, how to give you everything you want, and it's got it already there, and it's all visualized, and it's just waiting for you to lower your resistance so that you can manifest it. So that's how I relate it to the Abram. Message.
Yeah, it can be a little confusing. Actually, this is true for Abraham's message and for a lot of this stuff. It can be confusing because on the one hand, the message is often, well, you are God. Your inner being is God. That's where God really is. It's the consciousness of who you are. That's what true God is. And at other times, the verbiage is used in a way that is the same as the verbiage used as when describing an external God. And that duality can be quite confusing for people at times. I find that the ones who are able to express it in a way that kind of take you from the external and draw you into the internal, I think they're the ones who are the most effective. But what do you think?
Well, I like Abram's line. I mean, it's quite simple. I like drawing a circle to explain it to people. Mm-hmm. Big circle saying you were non-physical before you came into this physical, big circle. Mm-hmm. Then I say a little circle in the middle saying your big circle, your non-physical, decided to come into the physical universe, contrasting mm-hmm. universe, and it's the small circle, and it chose a vibrational interpreting machine mm-hmm. called the physical body. And that mm-hmm. small circle and the big circle are here together now. They're not separate.
What kind of reaction do you get when you present that to people?
Most of the time, it's a new concept, and they need to take time to absorb it.
Yeah.
But mostly positive, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've ever had much negative.
That's good, then, because if it's positive, that means that you are successfully helping them bridge that gap. You're helping them transition their thinking, which is good. Mm-hmm. That's very good. And concentric circles, I like that anyway. Mm-hmm. I like it in part because concentric circles is a way of describing a target. Yeah. And what you're doing is you're helping people reach the bullseye, which is that's a cool concept.
But the interesting thing that I'm really getting now is tuning my vibration to what I want to perceive. In other words, realizing that I'm a radio, that I'm tuning to different stations based on what I'm vibrating, and it's just becoming clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer. What am I thinking? Which is what I'm vibrating? Mm-hmm. Which is what I'm going to attract? But it just starts getting clearer and clearer and clearer as it goes along. Mm-hmm. When you start seeing the truth in it, the way it actually works, that it does actually work that way, that you've tested it enough that it's now real for me, that and now I'm consciously using it. And so it's a step by step process. You can't expect somebody just to jump into it straight away, fully understand that, but it's really cool once you get it. It changes everything. there's so many things that are changing in my life at the moment as well. So, just step by step by step. And, you don't want too many things to change too much, because then you go out of your comfort zone. And if it's still in your comfort zone, you can have, I see some individuals, they really speed through life at a pace. You have no idea of how they do it. And I can talk about some friends of mine that have created an incredible reality that is just will blow your mind. I mean, if I just start at the kind of things that they've been through, it's just, I don't want that kind of pace. It's exciting as hell, but not quite my cup of tea. I don't think I want to tune to that vibration. Wow. Literally, I could talk about them for about a day.
Mm. Yeah. So what you're basically saying is you're the kind of person who'd rather go to watch the movie than to appear in the movie.
Bit of both.
Bit of both. Oh, okay.
No. I definitely want to put my foot in the movie now and again.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Definitely want to act.
So let's take this back to the concept that was just expressed from the handbook. Okay. There, be sure of one thing. The has imagined it quite a bit better than you have. Now, the is, we just said, is our inner being, what I call my inner Walt, or our higher self. And that's where we can get a little confusion because, well, my higher self has imagined it better than I am. Yeah, except that my higher self is me. So it's a little bit blurry there.
They're talking to the resistance to expressing and experiencing and clearly visualizing and understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
It's talking about, it's pointing to that resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that resistance is you have to have some way to express it that is meaningful and useful. So I understand why they do what they do, but I also find that sometimes the metaphors get a little bit hairy.
It does, until it becomes clear.
Yes, clarity comes. And I am now more appreciative than ever before of what Abraham teaches with their 22-point scale, because they put clarity at the very, very top.
Mm.
I can remember even 6 months
ago. And it's really interesting. That's what I've always sought for, is clarity, more than anything else. And it really surprised me when I saw that as well.
Yeah.
Wow. And I, you know, somebody said to me, what is your ultimate goal in life? I said, clarity. They looked and they thought and they're like, yeah, no matter what I said, whatever they were thinking of, clarity would enhance it. Mm-hmm. You know, more love, you get great, more clarity to get more love. You know, if it's more in alignment, then, you know, clarity will give you the more enlightenment, you know. So it kind of has the ripple effect of producing anything and everything, because you've got clear thoughts about what you believe, what you know exists, how the universe works, rules to the game of life, which is what the term I love, you know, because you're clear about that, you can understand how to carve your life so much better.
What I noticed whenever I looked at that phrase being at the top, the word clarity being at the top of that list, because it's actually, I think it's 6 words that make up that top layer.
Oh yeah.
The scale. At first I wondered why clarity was up there. Now I have a much better understanding of it. And what I'm beginning to understand even more is that they are, you can almost put equal signs between each of those different words. So joy is clarity. Joy equals clarity, right? You know, and you can take that with all of them that are up there. They're all the same. There are 6 words that are all saying the exact same thing.
Well, when they say the same thing, you're talking about the same vibration.
The same vibration, right. Yeah. And once I understand it that way, yeah, it's true. Because as I have lived more often in that first level, the highest level of vibration on the 22-point scale, I do find that the clarity and the joy are the same. In fact, when something isn't joyful, it's not clear. It's not clear at all.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is different individuals like Walt might be more drawn to one of the other 6 and where I'm more drawn to the clarity. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can tell which ones I'm drawn to because the 2 of the 6 that I remember are joy and clarity.
So. Exactly. I remember teaching my daughter from as young as she could consciously remember. I said to her, because of illusions, because of the book before Abraham, I was teaching her what's the reason for life? And I said, you know, it doesn't matter what she came up with it. I put it into one of the 2 fingers, you know. Better put the fingers the other way around.
Yes, good question. Not so meaningful in the US, but I understand what you mean.
Or use different fingers.
In the US, there's 1 finger, it's not 2, but I understand.
Either joy or learning or a combination. And she really got it, you know. Mm. She took it to school. Nobody was really interested, of course.
Oh, that's too bad. Oh.
But, you know, it has been part of her guiding philosophy along the way from a young age. Yeah.
That's actually something I wanted to mention about the previous chapter. He breaks everything down into 2 categories, either fun or learning.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to contrast that for a moment with what Abraham says, because Abraham says we're here for 1 thing, joy. That's it. Hmm. So what do you think about that? I mean, he's saying joy and learning.
You don't have to necessarily separate them. You can have joy learning.
True.
So, you know, you're looking at the 2-ended stick as well. And I'm thinking the simplicity you know, most people can grasp what Abram is saying, what Richard Bach is saying very quickly and easily. What Abram's saying maybe take is another step. You know,
that's true.
A little further down the line, but it is clearer. So, you know, but from a beginning step, that was amazing. It was so useful in my life. For as long as I remember. I mean, I was given that book when I was very young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read that one fairly young too. So anyway, we're
what year did you say it came out again?
1975.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was all of 18 years old in 1975.
Yeah, I was much younger.
we won't say how much younger. But anyway, just wanted to make sure I got our announcements in before we're done with the show. And that is, if you're not yet a subscriber to the podcast, what are you waiting for? Come on, join the fun. When you're a subscriber, all the episodes come right to your smartphone or to your device every single time that we publish. So become a subscriber by going to loatoday.net. It's really easy. It is now set up so that the page shows what is necessary for the device you're using. And in most cases, it's just a click and then follow a wizard and you're done. Then once, of course, you're subscribed, then next thing to do is share the fact that you're enjoying the episode so that other people can get their daily dose of happy as well. And, you know, finally, be sure to contact us, watch the live stream if you feel inclined to do so, share your questions, because we love it when we get questions, when we get people contributing, whether it's about the book that we're reading in this case or just whatever topic we're talking about. We love it when you come and, you know, share with us on live stream interaction. Not that we don't love our podcast listeners, because that's where most of them are. We do love them very, very much. So thank you very much. And look forward to, we're like two-thirds of the way through the book. We're flying through this book, which is not hard to do because it's an easy book. But yeah, we're going to be finishing this one in a few episodes. So I look forward next week to carrying on with chapter 10 with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Take care, Walt.
Cheers, everybody. Stuff.
Have a great week.
Thanks, everybody. And I almost forgot. I have mentioned this on the last two podcast episodes, but I want to remind people we are now casting for our fiction podcast series, The Grass is Greener. If you've ever thought you'd want to appear in an audio-only production, play a role, you know, maybe you've done some community theater or something like that, feel free to contact us. Send me your... just send me a 20-second video of yourself just talking on any subject so we can hear what you sound like. And send it to me at my email address, walt@loatoday.net, and we will include you in the auditioning process. So there's the final announcement. So thank you very much, everybody. We will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Carpe diem.